Following are comments on John Webster's The Duchess of Malfi, Act 3. This night I will force confession from her. Ferdinand expresses to Bozzola his determination to find out who is the father of his sister's three children. In Act 3, Scene 1, by the time Delio again visits the court in Malfi, the Duchess has had three children by Antonio, and as he admits, quote unquote, "the common rabble do directly say she is a strumpet." Act 3, Scene 1, lines 25 through 26. Yet it is still a secret that Antonio is the father of these children. This moment, in turn, is followed by the surprise entrance of Ferdinand, who says that he has found a proper husband for the Duchess, none other than Count Malatesta. The Duchess seems to recoil at the mention of this name and calls him, quote unquote, "a mere stick of sugar candy." Act 3, Scene 1, line 42, when Bozzola suggests to Ferdinand that, quote unquote, "there hath been some sorcery used on the Duchess," he waves away the notion, saying, quote unquote, "the witchcraft lies in her rank blood. This night I will force confession from her." Act 3, Scene 1, lines 62 through 63 and 78 through 79. The scene ends with Ferdinand thanking Bozzola for not flattering his grandiose self-regard. Act 3, Scene 2. "Why should only I, of all the other princes of the world, be cased up like a holy relic?" The Duchess defends her honor against Ferdinand's scorn after he hears her speaking with the man who must be her children's father. In Act 3, Scene 2, Webster begins with a charming exchange of domestic happiness between Antonio and the Duchess. She muses, quote unquote, "that noble men shall come with cap and knee to purchase a night's lodging of their wives." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 5 through 6. The playwright shows exquisite timing in that just before Ferdinand enters and shatters the couple's happiness, the Duchess is fondly imagining a future time. Quote unquote, "when I wax gray, I shall have all the court powder their hair with arras to be like me." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 58 through 59. Ferdinand is hiding in the background, and he hears the Duchess conversing with a man who is not visible to her or to Ferdinand. As soon as she catches sight of her brother, the Duchess strikes a heroic pose. Quote unquote, "'tis welcome, for know whether I am doomed to live or die, I can do both like a prince." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 68 through 70. The Duchess finally admits that she is, in fact, married, and sets about defending her decision to be so. Quote unquote, "why might not I marry? I have not gone about in this to create any new world or custom." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 108 through 110. Ferdinand lashes her with, quote unquote, "thou art undone," and proceeds to cudgel her with a mini sermon on the precariousness of reputation. Act 3, Scene 2, line 110. "Once it is lost," he insists, "it will never return." The Duchess's response is heartrending and eloquent, but it has no chance of changing Ferdinand's mind. Quote unquote, "why should only I, of all the other princes of the world, be cased up like a holy relic? I have youth and a little beauty." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 134 through 137. This kind of remark puts us in the uncomfortable position of feeling a great deal of sympathy for the Duchess. She is, after all, being treated like a valuable object by the Cardinal and Ferdinand, but at the same time realizing that we can't simply ignore all the warnings we have heard about what happens when the great stoop to base stratagems to hide their folly. There's something admirable about the Duchess's forcefulness of character, and we know she acts as she does only because a woman in her era was hardly free to pursue her desires openly, the way a noble man sometimes could. However, the Duchess's private desires have at least in part brought disarray to her state, a fact that even the despicable behavior of Ferdinand and the Cardinal in their desire to control her, can't entirely erase. Ferdinand leaves the Duchess with a poniard, apparently itself a suggestion that she should use it to end her life. A politician is the devil's quilted anvil. Bozola skillfully deploys his rhetoric of virtue and wins the confidence of the Duchess, who tells him Antonio is her husband and entrusts him with their affairs. Still in Act 3, Scene 2, Bozola enters and remarks to the Duchess that he saw Ferdinand departing on horseback in great haste for Rome. Realizing that Ferdinand did not have time to relate to Bozola the entirety of what he had learned, the Duchess comes up with a serviceable lie. Frederick, she says, was in such haste because he needed to set right Antonio's corrupt financial dealings with, quote-unquote, Neapolitan Jews. Act 3, Scene 2, line 167. Alone for a moment with Antonio when he enters, the Duchess tells him that he must make his way to Ancona and rent a house, and she will send money and jewelry after him to sustain the family. Act 3, Scene 2, lines 172 through 179, inclusive. She must also, she tells him, cook up a magnanima menzogna, or noble lie, to the effect that he, Antonio, has cozened her out of a great sum of money and is therefore a corrupt steward. If that's the case, obviously he must be booted out of court. Soon after this discussion with Antonio, the Duchess gives a fine performance in which she openly berates him in front of Bozola and his officers. Bozola promptly lays a trap for the Duchess by skillfully defending Antonio's honor in his absence. He suggests that the steward is by no means corrupt, but that he has been falsely accused by others. This rhetoric of virtue succeeds at once with the Duchess, probably because she was not expecting it from Bozola. She admits earnestly, if unwisely, quote-unquote, "This good one that you speak of is my husband." Act 3, Scene 2, line 270. She confesses as well that Antonio is the father of her three children. When Bozola swears that he will keep the Duchess's secret, she tells him to take her wealth and send it after Antonio at Ancona. Act 3, Scene 2, lines 298 through 300. Bozola offers a refinement on the scheme. She should make a religious pilgrimage to the Madonna's shrine at Loreto so as to make her trip seem like a stately and holy progress instead of a precipitous flight from danger. Just like that, the Duchess is in the grip of Bozola. Now, of course, he knows that Antonio is the Duchess's husband, since she has told him so directly. What Bozola has just done, he names the art of, quote-unquote, a politician, who is, he says, quote-unquote, the devil's quilted anvil. Act 3, Scene 2, line 318. Why? Because, as the Methuen New Mermaids editor suggests in a footnote, he deadens the warning noise that should accompany the devil's hammering out of new sins. In Bozola's scene-ending soliloquy, we may be able to detect a hint of the moral change that will overtake him in the fourth act. He seems to be filled with self-disgust, even as some of his words come across as chortling over a wicked success. Quote unquote, "Oh, this base quality of intelligencer! Why, every quality in the world prefers but gain or commendation." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 322 through 324. At such a moment, Webster's genius for the oddly complex, ambivalent villain comes to the fore. This kind of remark makes Bozola both more evil and more human than the average stage or stock villain. We sense that we are dealing with a primal energy that might, depending on circumstances, be turned to good or evil. Act 3, Scene 3. "I will instantly solicit the state of Ancona to have them banished." While Ferdinand caustically condemns the Duchess and her less-than-exalted husband, Antonio, the Cardinal plans to have them both kicked out of Ancona along with their children. In the very brief Act 3, Scene 3, we see the Cardinal, Ferdinand, and Delio crack jokes at the expense of the unmartial Count Malatesta. But talk soon comes round to the demerits of Antonio and the Duchess. As usual, Ferdinand is the most vituperous. He says of the Duchess, quote unquote, "Methinks her fault and beauty blended together show like leprosy, the whiter, the fouler." Act 3, Scene 3, lines 60 through 62. As for Antonio, Ferdinand all but spits, quote unquote, "a slave that only smelled of ink and counters, and never in his life looked like a gentleman but in the audit time." Act 3, Scene 3, lines 70 through 72. "Tell us what you really think, Ferdinand." Well, the Cardinal's plan is simple with regard to Antonio and the Duchess. Himself about to turn soldier temporarily instead of remaining a churchman, he will, quote-unquote, instantly solicit the state of Ancona to have them banished. Act 3, Scene 3, lines 64 through 65. The two will end up on the run, which is hardly a respectable way for a Duchess and her husband to live. Act 3, Scene 4. Yet the Cardinal bears himself much too cruel. Pilgrims to the shrine at Loreto behold a dumb show in which the Cardinal exchanges his religious authority for a military role, and the Duchess and her family are stripped of power and exiled from Ancona. In Act 3, Scene 4, Webster represents the Cardinal's resignation of his religious authority and acceptance of a military position. The Duchess is symbolically stripped of her power when the Cardinal takes her ring away and the family is exiled from Ancona. Webster's choice of representational mode is interesting here, since, after all, he could have played this scene as consisting of ordinary dialogue and action, but he chooses a dumb show. Most likely, this is because he wants the audience to feel the weight and symbolism of the moment, and a ceremony is the best way to generate such an effect. In particular, we see that the Duchess is prevented from resisting the power that is being wielded against her. The Pope is involved, and there is no discourse that will serve her turn, a point that is nicely underscored by the silence of the ceremony. Realism isn't always a playwright's best friend. The perspective offered in this scene comes mainly from two pilgrims who have come to pay their respects at the shrine. The first pilgrim says, quote unquote, "I have not seen a goodlier shrine than this." Act 3, Scene 4, Line 1. But when they see the ceremony, both pilgrims are distressed. The first understands that the Duchess may have blundered in marrying Antonio, but says all the same, quote unquote, "Yet the Cardinal bears himself much too cruel." Act 3, Scene 4, Lines 25 through 26. From the second pilgrim, we learn that, quote unquote, "the Pope, forehearing of her looseness, hath seized into the protection of the church the dukedom, which she held as dowager." Act 3, Scene 4, lines 30 through 32. Act 3, Scene 5. "I am armed gainst misery." The Duchess advises Antonio to take the couple's eldest son and hurry to Milan, and she confronts the cynical Bozzola, who has come with a party of soldiers to arrest her, with stoic and Christian dignity. In Act 3, Scene 5, Antonio and the Duchess spend a little time musing about the turn of events that has come their way, with the Duchess expressing a wish to be like the wild birds who live happy, natural lives. Act 3, Scene 5, lines 17 through 20 inclusive. The Duchess counsels Antonio to take their eldest son and make his escape to Milan, which he consents to do. Act 3, Scene 5, lines 54 through 58 inclusive. Just then, Bozzola enters bearing a letter from Ferdinand, which threatens Antonio by means of equivocal clichés that lend themselves to much darker interpretation. The Duchess has no trouble seeing through Ferdinand's literary gambit. It isn't hard to figure out what he really means by, quote-unquote, "send Antonio to me, I want his head in a business," and, quote-unquote, "I had rather have his heart than his money." Act 3, Scene 5, line 27 and line 34. Webster may have picked up from Shakespeare the understanding that a major distinction between good people and bad ones lies in the latter group's propensity for turning figurative horror and abuse into literal. It soon becomes plain that Bozola has not come simply to play the role of postman. He has come to surround and capture the Duchess and Antonio. The Duchess is correct that the two are being ambushed, not simply encountered. Act 3, Scene 5, Line 54. Bozola's announcement to the Duchess, quote unquote, "Your brothers mean you safety and pity," meets with contempt. Act 3, Scene 5, Line 107. Bozola dismisses Antonio as, quote unquote, "one of no birth," and counters the Duchess's defense of the man's virtue with the cruel put down, quote unquote, "a barren beggarly virtue." Act 3, Scene 5, Line 116 and 119. It is impossible to forget that he won the Duchess's confidence earlier by saying precisely the opposite. The Duchess is supposedly going to be escorted back to her palace in Amalfi with her remaining children and Cariola. How does she process this sad turn of events? She tells Bozola a story about a salmon and a dogfish or shark, in which the salmon explains the true way of making distinctions of quality between two beings. She closes with the proverbial thought, quote unquote, "I am armed against misery, bent to all sways of the oppressor's will. There's no deep valley, but near some great hill." Act 3, Scene 5, Lines 139 through 141. At the midway point in Webster's play, we enter a phase in which the Duchess will undergo what critics sometimes call a tragedy of suffering. But the play as a whole is certainly well described as a proper revenge tragedy. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Tuesday, July 15th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations from Webster's The Duchess of Malfi, I have relied on the Methuen New Mermaid's 5th edition, 2021.